been received during the period that there were annual infusions of capital? What was the total amount of capital?
The total sum that was retained by the corporation for use as capital was somewhere between 24 and 27 million. And it was received over a 4 to 5 year period.
And what is approximately the net worth of the corporation today?
Our 1984 audited financial statement, which is going out this month to our shareholders, would indicate about a $2 million asset value present of the corporation.
At the time I first became involved in management of the corporation, it owed
more money than it had in assets.
So you've come back from minus.
That's right. Yeah, it's, we've come back from minus to plus. And it ain't been easy. I've worn out four pairs of shoes tap dancing with creditors.
What about, have you thought about the question of the future, or do you have any idea how your shareholders feel about whether they should be able to sell their shares in after 1991? There's no land at stake here, and you don't see any realistic possibility of Congress providing land for the 13th Corporation. So how do you look at this whole business that we've been hearing about in Alaska for a year now? Well, should we be allowed to sell our shares? Should we have to sell them back to our corporation, or should we just be able to walk down to Pierce, Fenner and Bean, or whatever it is, Merrill Lynch, and say, here, what do I get for these?
Mm-hmm.
Any ideas?
I've got some personal thoughts on it. Our corporation, our board of directors, hasn't taken any official policy on that. We are members of the Alaska Federation of Natives, so to some extent we'd be influenced by that body. Couple of thoughts on that, I guess. Let me give you another one on the land. My notion on the compensation for land, given the fact that the 13th was created out of a bad political compromise, it seems to me that there ought to be some recognition, somehow, that the 13th shareholders indeed are second-class citizens under this act. I beat my brains out trying to think of a way to do that, which would sound reasonable to the 12 corporations inside of Alaska, and which would make some sense in Congress. And I don't know that there is an answer to that, but my thoughts to this point in time have been, perhaps there should be a calculation made of the total amount of 7i revenues that have gone to the 12 corporations inside of Alaska, and those numbers are available. They're reported in their annual audited financial statements. Between the period of inception of the corporations and until, let's say, 1991. Then you would take that number and you would calculate what the 13th's pro rata share of those funds would have been if the 13th had been able to participate in 7i. And then, using that number, talk to Congress about an appropriation, which is very unrealistic these days back there, equivalent to that amount of money. Possibly even earmarking all or a part of those funds so that you'd have to use it to buy land. Now that's where I've kind of come in getting land, because as I said before, I don't think that Congress is going to authorize an amendment that will give the 13th land, because it absolutely makes a nightmare mess out of the 7i formula and the situation that exists inside of Alaska now, and I think it just isn't going to work. Personal opinion. That's not to say we haven't given up on it. We're doing our best, but that's my thought on the land and the how to get to the land. Yeah. Give us the money, we'll buy the land. Give us the money we should have had as a sharing in the 7i, but didn't get. Make us first class citizens, and we'll buy some nice land. Another variation on that theme, I suppose, would be an amendment that would allow us to choose land outside of Alaska, not participate in 7i, but other federal lands. The state of Oregon is 51% of the state of Oregon is federally owned land. It's somewhat similar to that here in the state of Washington, just for an example. So there's lots of federal land around. That's one thought on that. Now, on the 1991 and what to do with those shares.
I'll certainly come to you whenever you wish, Mr. Dalton.
I just want to ask you.
Yeah. Well, well, we've got him here. We'll
take advantage of it. On the 1991, that's another tough one. And again, our corporation has taken no official position on it. I've got some personal feelings about it. I know that because the 13th is in such weak financial condition and has no land, it's not going to be an attractive buy. So there, if the shares are going to go on the market in 1991, I doubt very much that any big financier is going to get very involved in trying to corner the market on 13th Regional Corporation stock. Hopefully in a couple of years they may look at that differently, because I think the corporation will be worth more then. But that's one thought. I do know that of my brothers and sisters who are involved with the corporations inside of Alaska are very concerned about large business corporations, foreign and national corporations, that are fully prepared to do their best to take over some of the 12 corporations inside because of the extremely valuable minerals that lie under the ground that are owned by those corporations. Some of the largest ore reserves lie under lands that are owned by Alaska Native corporations in Alaska, and not just gold, some of the other precious minerals that are used in today's high-tech work and supersonic jets and all those kinds of things. That concerns me, because the big corporations are going to have more money than the very biggest inside Alaska Native Corporation, which would be Sea Alaska. I don't know that that's right, and I don't think that's the intent of Congress. As a guy who's taught federal Indian law in years past to Lost, and who has been in court battling for Indian rights, if that does happen, it would certainly be history repeating itself. That is, the Caucasian non-native coming in and reaping the benefit from something that was not intended to benefit others and the natives themselves. Now, from that perspective, that bothers me. So I think there ought to be some protection, perhaps not blocking shareholders from selling their shares. I think if they want to do that, they should be able to do it. But perhaps, as the one gentleman suggested, selling it back to the corporation, keeping it in the family, so to speak. I'm sure you're aware, and perhaps some of the other people here are, in other tribes in the lower 48, the ownership interest in Indian trust lands, as they call them, the Sioux and the other tribes, pass typically through inheritance because most people don't have wills. And in today's generation of many of our brothers and sisters in the lower 48, you see, I've seen this in legal papers that have come across my desk, a Native American person who will have and you have to remember, go back to grade school when you're studying fractions, a 162nd 398th interest in 1 acre of land on the reservation in Pine Ridge in South Dakota. That's crazy. Think of the legal problems involved in you know, trying to get everyone to agree to do anything with that. And that's one of the things I think the Alaska Native Claims Act was trying to stay away from, that kind of a problem. But I don't know that they ought to be outright restricted, but I feel very strongly for my kids and my grandkids that I'd like to see them share in the work and effort, at least, that I and some of my people from the 13th are putting into making that company go. I'd be real upset, I'd be rolling over in my grave, if I knew that there was some non-native person who waltzing around brokering these shares or acquiring the corporation, looting its assets and selling it, like happened with Wean Airlines in Alaska. Now, that's not a native corporation, but the pattern is very clear. You know, you go in, you buy a public corporation, you take it private, you sell off its assets, you make a nice process and a profit, and then you kiss it goodbye. And that's something else that could happen. That's certainly not the intent of Congress, that these corporations would simply disappear and no longer be there.
Mr. Dalton, you had a question for Mr. Engelstad.
Yes.
First of all, most of us, there are an awful lot number of us in not only in Seattle, but all over the United States, who are not participants with the 13th region, as the papers would have us believe. They always say that the 13th region is for natives, no longer residents of Alaska. That is not true. We had the option under the Act to enroll in the region of our origin if we intend to return there at some future date. When I was president of the Alaska Federation of Natives of Washington, we vigorously opposed the formation of the 13th region, primarily because we felt that the people living outside of Alaska should retain their heritage in the land in Alaska by enrolling within their home regions. But I'm not here to lecture about the requirements of the Act. I'm interested to know if the 13th region does have a viable board of directors acting in the interest of the 4,000 shareholders as of now.
Yeah, I believe we do. I guess that you might have to check with some of the other 13th shareholders to find out what their opinions are. The board has changed quite a bit. Those of you folks that live here and like to read the Seattle papers have probably read about the various political battles and things that have gone on with the 13th, which, by the way, in my opinion, has gotten to the point where it smacks of racism. The local press here delights in talking about all the bad things that have happened to the 13th and all the screwy deals they made in the past and all, everything bad, nothing good about the 13th. Love to have dissidents marching to the Attorney General's office and those kinds of things. Don't take the time to, they go back into their, I worked as a newspaper reporter for 6 years, I know what they do, they go back into their clip file and they pull out the old stuff on the 13th region and say, wow, look at these guys, boy, they really threw away that money just like we thought they would. I think that's wrong. It's an attitude they have, it's racist. But to answer your question, our board currently is myself, we've got a 9-member board, I'm one of them, I'm an attorney from Portland, Oregon, I'm a quarter blood. Our senior vice president is a surgical nurse in Santa Ynez, California. Our vice president is a San Francisco business executive in laser microscopics and lives in the Bay Area. Our treasurer is a Seattle businesswoman, Barbara DiCafano, who I know was going to be here at least during part of these hearings. Our treasurer is... our secretary is Dr. Robert Garten Jr., who is a practicing chiropractic physician in Auburn, Washington. The rest of our board is made up of a couple of new folks and a couple of folks who have been associated with the corporation in times past. Raymond Combs, who is a special assistant to the Secretary for Health for Housing and Urban Development in Washington, D.C., Billy B. Johnson, who I think many of you know, has been very active in Native Affairs here in the Seattle area. He's, I think he's now a lead man. I hope I don't peg him lower than what he is with the King County Road Department. Loy Arundella from California, who is the head of a radiology department in one of the small hospitals there. And Albert Kaushi, who is a professional engineer in Anchorage, Alaska. Albert's the first director of our corporation who lives in Alaska.
Several persons presently enrolled in the 13th region have told me that they have received no information at all under the law. You are required to make annual reports. Are
these
right. being made?
There, as a matter of fact, they're being mailed out this month. Mm-hmm. We held back the 83 audited financial statement to combine it with the 84 audited financial statement to save money in mailing.
Well,
that's going out this month. But your comment's correct. I think the last shareholders newsletter for the 13th went out in May of 83. So it's been some time since our people who haven't been able to write or call have heard from us. And I hasten to add, I personally answer every letter that comes into the office and when I'm in Seattle, which is a couple of days a week. I also talk to all of our shareholders who call. I commute by car up here and some nights sleep in a sleeping bag on the couch in the office, because we can't always afford to pay me to get a hotel room.
Well, certainly wish you the best of luck. You know,
thank you.
Even though we oppose the formation of the 13th region, we do sympathize with you and hope you are successful in the future.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you, Justice Berger.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Engels. Did you have a question for Mr. Engels?
I just wanted to ask one question. You were mentioning that I don't belong to the 13th, but I do like to have the record straight. You were mentioning that the 13th was trying to get land, and you felt that the state of Washington's legislative delegation was responsible. But isn't there a rule of common law that any native people who abandon their homeland lose all rights to their land?
You got me. You have to ask Justice Berger here. We're both lawyers.
Well, I was preached this many times by William Paul Sr., and he said that the only reason that the natives who left Alaska that lived down here were allowed to participate in the Alaska Land Claims Act is a great many of them were forcibly removed. The Aleuts during the Second World War, the Eskimos,
right.
So that they couldn't be told that they abandoned their land, and like I said in the beginning, my mother was forced to leave. But when people signed the law, their enrollment, and stated that they no longer wished to be part of Alaska, wasn't that the same as claiming that they were abandoning their homeland?
That wasn't exactly the choice they were given. I see where you're coming from, and that might be one way to interpret it, and there may be some people who interpreted it that way. But it would be similar to if you live here in Seattle and you decide to live down in Portland, so you move down to Portland, the state of Washington or King County decides to take your property away from you because you've moved.
Yeah, well, that doesn't apply to the natives, though. Native law is when a native people, like one of the bad problems with a lot of stateside Indians, that they cannot prove that they lived in a certain area.
Yeah.
And as a result, they're called landless. And the thing is that I'm trying to state is that I've always felt that the 13th was very weak in their position of getting land, because I filled out the thing and I did something that I have been accused of saying that was illegal, because I said I was a resident of Juneau. And I've never lived in Juneau in all my life, and the chances of me ever living there are very remote.
Mm-hmm.
But as a result, I'm enrolled as a Gold Belt shareholder.
Yeah.
But people who actually answered that question honestly and said they never wanted to go back to Alaska and had no intention of it could get shafted by being put into the 13th.
Yeah, that's true. And then there's a category, well, your comments are well taken. I don't know what to say, except that, like myself, I was born and raised in Oregon, so I've been in Alaska a lot, but I was never raised there.
May I ask you a question?
Yes, that's all right.
You're very
no,
popular today. In the event, let's just say, supposing that you come to a point in time where you can no longer operate and have not necessarily bankruptcy, but have to disband as a corporation, are there any provisions in the act to provide for procedure?
Distribute the assets, you mean?
Yes.
Not to my knowledge. I think because it's a private corporation from profit, the laws of Alaska that deal with any corporation up there would apply, and the corporation would dissolve and liquidate its assets and then pay what was left after the liquidation to the shareholders pro rata based on the number of shares they held. That's, you know, you're either in business or you're not in business, and that's what I think would happen. That's not my plan for the 13th, mm-hmm. Understand that. Don't leave here and go tell your friends in the 13th.
Yeah, I have no intention of doing that. The other question that I wanted to ask you was was there an option period for a lot of the shareholders to return to their village corporations or to become at large members?
Yes, there was an opt-in, opt-out period that, and there was, those of you who were here then or in Oregon where I was, there was a huge campaign. I mean, there were people pounding doors on the phones and sending mail constantly about that.
Well, the thing that puzzles me is that it was at this point in time that the shareholders were beginning to realize that there were more benefits to receive from, say, their village corporations and their large membership through the land base. Why is it that the 13th didn't disband at that time and become a portion of, or say, Sea Alaska or Chugach or wherever?
Sure. It's a thought, it's a thought I've had. The Alaska Native Claims Act prohibits the 13th and only the 13th from merging with any of the other corporations. All 12 of the corporate, I'm not sure of this, whether all 12 can do it, but the corporations inside of Alaska can merge if they want to, have to be approved by the shareholders. If I remember how this happened, the opt-in, opt-out period was the result of a federal court order from Judge Gatch, who sits in the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C. Those folks who had voted for the 13th on their original enrollment forms, I don't think had the opportunity to opt. No, that's not right. I'm sorry. I'm talking off the top of my head.
Excuse me. There was a lot of confusion about the terminology on that form, I remember correctly. Yeah. And so there were many that joined inadvertently in the wrong corporation.
Sure.
They didn't understand that living down here that they had the right to return to their villages or to remain at large. Because of the way it was set up, it looked like they had only one option, and that was to belong to the 13th.
Yeah.
And there were many complaints about this at that time, if I remember correctly.
Yes, there were a lot of promises made of great and wonderful things, and then if you wanted to complicate it further, you had the BIA, who was kind of overseeing all this to make sure it was done right. And if any of you have had any association with the BIA, you know, you wouldn't let your kids stay overnight with them.
Really? Well, I worked for the BIA
Well,
at one time. I'm sure you'd be safe with me.
I think I would. My dealings with them haven't been as pleasant. My dealings haven't been as pleasant.
No, but what I want to say is I'm really and truly sorry that there weren't many people here to hear what you had to say, because you're saying exactly, and you're talking about exactly the situation that I was talking about this morning, that we're going to begin facing the same possibilities of having all our assets losing them through the loans that we have outstanding.
Yep.
And if our people had been here today, they might have heard the problems you're facing trying to save this remnant. And from my point of view, you're doing a beautiful job, because I knew quite a lot of the 13th people before you came along. And especially Ray Combs, and worked with him quite frequently. So I really was interested in your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Engelstad.
Thank you.
I think everyone appreciates your... Oh, another question. Well, there you are.
I don't want to dominate your...
No, here. Go ahead. I think everyone's pleased to hear what's happening.
I want to verse out on 13th Regional, because... back then, I went to sign in for 13th Regional, and I was the one that had the responsibility to find out whether I should be with Chugach's Corporation, my village. And matter of fact, I got both. But I didn't want to sign in for 13th Regional Corporation, because back then I was told that I wouldn't have any land in Alaska. And they put it clear to me, you know, that I wouldn't have no land in Alaska. And so I was more interested in the land than I was in money. And they also told me that they'd pay me so much for land, you know, and I said, no, I don't want it. And I said I would rather stay in my corporation and also Port Graham Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is I got relatives that are in the 13th Regional Corporation, and I don't think they're here right now,
mm-hmm.
but I find it very interesting.
Well, tell them what you heard. I should add, too, that in case there's any misconception on this, the 13th got no more money than anybody else did. The money was divided absolutely evenly. So 13th shareholders, you know, got as much as any shareholder from any other corporation. The 13th didn't get more money in no land. They got the same amount of money in no land.
Mm-hmm. Well, that answers it.
Yeah.
I also want to speak to back in 1971, our school teacher lined us up. There was about 30 of us. And we weren't given no 160 acres. And I want to know who I can talk to about that, because there was many of us that lost out on it, and they said, yeah, it was the deadline.
Well,
we
that's
get it.
Can
we still get it?
No, you can't, unless you filed your papers before December 19th, 1971. But we've had a lot of questions about that in the villages in Alaska. You could,
yeah, but
you could
no
write
fault
to
our
you could write to Charlie Bunch of the BIA in Juneau, or to Dave Fleury, Dave Fleury of Legal Services in Anchorage, and they will help you. But if you didn't get your papers filed, there's really nothing they can do. But if there's something that perhaps has been overlooked in your case, you should write to either or both of those people. But nothing we can do about it. Those allotments came to an end when ANCSA was passed, and if you didn't get your papers in for the 160 acres at that time, it's too late now. That's the trouble.
Okay, I got another question for you. I belong to Port Graham Village Corporation. Before 1991 or after 1991, could I change over to another corporation under Chugiak's Native Corporation? Because I haven't been living in my hometown from the time I was 14.
Well, I think you're.
I've been in and out of my village.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you can.
The village that I was born in.
Yeah, I don't think you can change your enrollment now. I think the period for doing that has ended. But if you're in Port Graham, you'd also be in Chugiak.
Yes, I would like to confirm that. To see if it can be passed, that many of us that do live somewhere else and not living in our main corporation where we were born, and I think it's unfair. I think really that they should pass for us to live wherever we choose and give us the opportunity to settle somewhere other than our hometown.
Okay, thank you.
Down.
Did you have a question for Mr.?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
I have a question for you. Yeah, when you're talking, you told me you're a quarter native. Well, what tribe were you from?
Inuit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, from up north. Also, we had, when the 13th was being formed, I had the opportunity to talk to several of the directors at that time, and I either could have stayed in Sea Alaska or larger, I could have joined them. And I took this into consideration. The guys are running the corporation. I didn't want to join them. I just like being on a fishing boat with a bum skipper. You don't want to get aboard. Well, one of the guys told me, he says, we'll get more money if you join. He says, I'll even buy you a fishing boat. I says, okay, you buy me a fishing boat first, and then I'll join you. Well, I'm at sea, as the time goes on, I still belong to Sea Alaska. I didn't want to change. And I was going to ask you another question, but there's two other people I lost my question when the two other people got ahead of me there. So, another thing I was asking you, what I was thinking about is, are you folks asking for a second chance? Land or something that they? Because they told me that when if I signed up for Sea Alaska, I wouldn't have any land, just like this other lady said there, too. Are you asking for another chance for land, or is that what you're...
It's still part of our plan to do everything we can to get it. I worked as a lobbyist for some years, and I'm a little bit more realistic about our chances, I think, than some of our people. My heart is in it, and theirs is, too. I don't think it's real possible. When we were allowed to join the Alaska Federation of Natives, they wouldn't have anything to do with the 13th until 3 years ago. They finally allowed us in as members.
13th has to sit at the back of the bus, I guess. We are trying to participate through the Alaska Federation of Natives. The last thing that happened in that, at the last annual convention in October, there is a resolution that is still alive that would provide some consideration for land to people who are at large. That would involve not only all of the shareholders of the 13th, but all of you who belong to other regional corporations who are at large instead of in the other category. But, you know, that's, we're trying. To be honest, I've had to spend almost all my time just keeping the company above water. It is not something that we have lost sight of, because I think it's, as I had said earlier, one of the most important things to most of our people is the land. It goes back to our history and our culture. That is important. The rest of it, who cares?
Yes, sir, and I would like to ask one more question to Tom Berger, and thanks for your... Thank you for answering my
question. I'm going to leave.
Yeah, thank well, thank you, sir. I think we all appreciate your coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Berger, my family and us have been filing for various lands up there since this, you know, they allowed us to do that for the 160 acres, but they have nowhere on record that we even filed from the beginning since the land suit started, I mean, since ANSCA started. And I don't know who's in charge, but we do have the receipts for the time we filed. So, I'd like to have the names of the people again that we can contact to see who would have copies of our filing date.
Well, you can write to Charlie Bunch of the BIA in Juneau. And but there's a man, a lawyer at Legal Services in Anchorage, whose name is Dave Fleury, F-L-E-U-R-Y, and he is the expert on allotments, and he's testified at our hearings, as a matter of fact, and we've referred everybody who's inquiring about allotments to him, and so feel free to get in touch with either one of them and tell them I suggested you talk to them. I should warn you that there's a backlog of thousands of allotments. You know, a lot of people, probably like you, have receipts to show they filed in time, but land hasn't been surveyed and nothing's been done. And there are literally thousands of people waiting for BIA and the BLM to get along with their allotments. But you get in touch with Dave Fleury or Charlie Bunch.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Well, anyone else like to say anything this afternoon? We're meeting again tonight at 7:30.
Before you close for this afternoon, I would like to make a few comments.
Please do.
Sid, to begin with, on behalf of myself and a number of other people, I'd like to state that we feel very fortunate we have a person such as yourself who's accepted the commitment to serve on the review commission. Also, I'm Sid Casey, 703 West Bertona, Seattle 98119, a Sea Alaska and Gold Belt shareholder. I was born and raised here in Seattle. Our my family were among the founders of Juneau and were involved in Wrangell as well. And over the years have kept in contact up there, and I myself have been all over Alaska in years past. Retired recently in January after many years as a union official, having headed UFCW Local 81, which was the largest meat cutter local here in the Northwest. Also served as chairman for a number of years on the as the head of the Washington Meat Industry Pension Trust, and also as head of the Washington Meat Industry Health and Welfare Trust. I say these so that you'll have a little idea of my background and what I've done over the years. Because of the constraints on my time, I've been primarily an observer on ANCSA, over the years and a concerned one, knowing what's happened in the many different groups up there. Prior to my retirement, I offered to my services, was accepted, and have been appointed as a member of the Sea Alaska Advisory Committee here from Seattle. Since that time, I have read quite a bit and listened a great deal, as I have here today, on the different viewpoints, and like to make a few observations of my own feelings and where I feel that we are at. I think the act, either by chance or design, contains a lot of contradictions, a lot of legal problems were written into it. And over the years, I've become a little bit cynical about the law and about the way that it does operate. I think all too often, it seems only to provide a way of for certain groups to have a monopoly of power within our society and for a period of time to be able to work with that power base. On the settlement, I think the government and our legislatures really had just two main things in mind. One, obviously, was to clear the title to that land in Alaska so that they could proceed with the oil and with the development for it. Along with that, and with the long, contentious legal arguments that have involved Indians and Indians' rights, over the years, they also wanted to clear that and get rid of that problem regardless within the Act. I think then moving from that point and writing the Act, we've ended up, as one individual stated here today, with quite a hodgepodge legally within the Act. For the groups, for instance, with the groups, we have 13 different groups up there. Over the years, and looking at the groups, they've never really been able to work together as a group in the past. There was no reason to assume that they would be able to in the future. And in order to change some of these basic things, we are going to have to be able to overcome that, and in the future be able to speak with one voice and make the changes that we want with one voice. Because going back to Congress now from 1971 to 1991, we have a total different ballgame. We have different people. We have some economic restraints we didn't have then. Our country is now in a global economy, which is totally different from what it was in 1971. We're going to have to be able to re-educate, if you will, a lot of the congressmen, a lot of the lobbyists, and so on, in order to be effective. We've spoke here today of having 6 years. We have much less than 6 years, actually, to be effective. The legal process itself to get a bill through eats up a lot of that time. So we're looking really at a 2 or 3 year period, realistically, to get our act together and be moving. On the act, too, is a criticism of it. It forced us into business. And although it was true that we had a percentage of people who did have the training, had the degrees, and knew the rules of running a business to a degree, they did not have the expertise. They didn't have it from their parents and so on, going back any length of time. And as we all know, it's one thing to know the rules. It's another thing to have the experience and know the exceptions to those rules, which makes something either work or not work. I think they've basically, in a lot of the areas, made the same mistakes that we've found throughout a lot of the minority businesses that have started under the SBA programs and so on. A lot of haggling within the groups, too large of boards and so on, and an inability to speak with a single voice within their own group, so that, in effect, a lot of the past years have been lost due to a drift rather than any cohesive movement within it, although all of the people virtually involved had good intentions to begin with. For the future, as a senior, I expect nothing myself that will come out of the act that's going to change my lifestyle in any way at all. And I don't think any senior realistically expects that. I do agree and have found throughout, despite all of the bickering, a real basic belief by virtually everyone that the act really was designed not simply for this generation, but for the generations to come. It was designed for a group to an extent that's at the bottom of the economic ladder, both economically, educationally, and so on. We have not entered the mainstream overall of this society. And culturally, we quite likely, in a lot of aspects, will never want to, and don't now. I do feel that we should, whatever comes out of it, we should be able to retain the basic land base for the future generations. That, to the extent possible, because of what has happened over this first 12-year period and can't be changed, that some of the corporations obviously will cease to exist and or will opt to sell their stock because of the manner that they're set up and the worth of that stock. But I think that wherever possible, the land should be retained and should be set aside from the business area of it so that the bankruptcies or the changes in the selling of stock in these corporations, which now come under the SEC or will in 1991, so that it's protected that way. Because I doubt if there's 2% of the people who are involved in these corporations that could actually explain what a leveraged buyout is, what a lot of the things which go on in stock corporations can and do, and the small amount of control that's needed in order to do this, and the long-term ideas that they have in order to be able to take over a company, and we could name virtually many of them. We have one here in Seattle, which is not too long ago that Bar S was sold. Without going into a great bit of detail, it was spun off from the corporate ownership of it privately, moving to four vice presidents who actually took over five plants with less than $5,000 a person being put in. But these are the type of things that are legal that can be happening in 1991. As I say, we were forced into this, and nobody in their right mind in America would take all of their assets and put them into a business and go 100%, which we were forced to do as native groups. Because when the business goes down, also the land and all of our holdings go down. Anyone with money or any corporate grouping goes, they move out, they put a small amount of money into it, they leverage it on credit based on what they hope to be able to make on that stock, and if it goes under, they accept the loss of that small portion of their holdings that they put into that business. They may turn around, walk down the street, open another one, and do the same thing, learning by their losses on the first one what they should have done and continue that way. We have been forced to put all of our cards into one bucket, and with a lot of constraints, with a group that was basically inexperienced, basically wished to remain native and move to native groups and native people to run them, which was not always the best thing to be done, and had no way actually, even if they had went out and hired, or even today if they had went out and hired, to know that they were getting the best people to run their corporation or how it would work out. So my own feeling and hopes for 1991 is that we'll be able to get more time so that we do not immediately move under the SEC, so that we can change those rules and or if necessary, if new legislation is needed rather than the IRAs or whatever is available, that will be able to be developed so that the main thrust of the act of providing a vehicle to improve the livelihood and provide education and so on for the coming generations will still be there. Because we do have within our own group greedy people, we have people who are self-serving, we have so many interrelated people serving on the different boards and different committees, that there's actually to a large percent a restraint on a lot of the people of even indicating how they basically feel with themselves within these groups and their own aims that don't have to be tempered again by Uncle Charlie or Aunt Susie sitting next to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Casey. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
My name is Ben Pierce, and I live at 519 32nd Avenue South, Seattle, Washington, 98144. I'm not a native, but I was interested in testifying because I've had a little bit of exposure to ANCSA. I've spent quite a bit of time in Alaska as a guide, kind of out camping in tents and whatnot, and have a vague appreciation for what it is that the natives feel towards the land and the resources on that land. I did spend a little bit of time traveling around in Alaska interviewing some of the village corporations in particular, just talking with the people who are in charge of running these village corporations. Talked with 17 of them in different areas of the state, and my general conclusion from talking with these people is that it wasn't appropriate at all to have village corporations set up as profit entities or have land be a corporate asset within these village corporations. As pointed out by Mr. Engelstad and others, a corporation to run requires a cash flow. This is something which on the village level is fairly difficult. Annual expenses include things like audits and legal fees and salaries. A majority of the people who I interviewed with in the villages were experienced white businessmen who had been brought in, and so therefore they were receiving a fair amount of the money that the corporation actually had.